Welcome. Today I will be interviewing Inspector Shauna Coxon. She is in her 20th year of policing with the Toronto Police Service. Inspector Shauna Coxon specializes in youth crime, child abuse, sex crimes, human rights, professional standards, community response, strategic analysis, and computer cybercrime, C3 section. Inspector Shauna Coxon successfully completed an honors BA in psychology from York University, a Master's of Arts in criminology from the University of Toronto, and her PhD in law. In addition, she is a published academic and she has lectured internationally. Inspector Shauna Coxon is deeply passionate about sustainable development, education, and international human rights. Today, I also have the great honor of having a co-host. Eric McKinley will be joining me in this interview. I'd like to begin by thanking you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with me today.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be here.
The first question I'd like to ask you is pertaining to your experience. You're currently in your 20th year of policing with the Toronto Police Service. Would you be able to discuss the significance of the computer cybercrime C3 section, along with how cybercrime has changed as time has progressed?
Well, I think it's one of the most interesting and exciting areas of policing right now, because people are moving into a digital experience. So the way that we experience reality, I mean, you see people, they're walking. I was on my way here and someone almost walked into me because they were looking at their phone while they were walking. But this is how we experience life now. So we see things in the real world, and then we have this digital experience that it's the lens through which we're seeing the world. So people are using social media in new and innovative ways, and open source generally, to be able to have a collaborative shared experience. But we've never seen a shift like this historically. We've never had anything like this in modern history. So when you look at how that impacts policing, I mean, it's impacting every area of life. And policing is still really a model that we've used for, you know, almost a century now. We have not shifted into the digital, social, cyber world in the same way. So C3 was really exciting for me to be a part of, because it allows us to shift into those spaces to look at crimes in new and innovative ways. And we may not be looking at cybercrime in the way that you might be thinking of it. So we will look at, you know, pure cyber, if you will, hacks, phishing schemes, that kind of thing. But we're also looking at traditional crime through the lens of the digital experience. So it's amazing the kind of technology that we have on us that we can process as evidence. So I got a Fitbit for Christmas. And it's
nice.
Interesting, because I thought if there was a homicide and somebody's wearing a Fitbit, I mean, this is another area of the digital world that we need to be looking at. You know, that would garner a lot of information about, you know, what that person did that day and their experience in the world that we would never have access to before. So C3 is part of a broader shift in policing in general that's really exciting right now.
As time progresses, have you noticed that there are changes in cybersecurity, and that as a result of all of these technological advancements, these cyber criminals are getting faster, smarter, and are in a way better at covering up their crime?
Well, I think technology is changing, and with every iteration of technology that changes, so does criminality in the way that it's used. So the answer to that is yes and no. I actually think that in the, you know, open source experience, that you've got this community of people that come together for good, and they come together for, you know, other purposes, including purposes that are harmful in society. Mm-hmm. So are they always improving and evolving? Yes. Are other people who are keen to help the police also improving and evolving? Yes. I think one of the biggest shifts that we're seeing is that we're moving from technology being a computer that's sitting on your desk into this integrated experience. So when you look at the technology of things, you know, your smart home, when you walk in the door, you know, your fridge is computerized, your television is computerized, your lights and curtains, for example, may be computerized now. So that digital experience creates new opportunities for criminals, and it creates new opportunities for policing as well. It's interesting.
What laws would you say have been implemented in order to address criminal offenses where the internet and information technologies have been used in the commission of a crime, such as fraud, identity theft, intellectual property infringements, money laundering and drug trafficking, just to name a few.
So we really have not caught up from a legal standpoint. The legal trajectory of trying to catch up in this innovative space is problematic because laws are slow to evolve. Just the process of lawmaking is slow and bureaucratic because it's meant to be well thought out and to have adequate input from, you know, people across Canada. And that's problematic in a space where things are moving so quickly. So a lot of the times, though, a traditional crime like fraud, it doesn't matter whether it happens online or in the real world. Fraud is fraud. So how the offense is committed doesn't matter. Where there has been new legislation created has, you know, in particular has been around cyberbullying that I think is really important because our laws had not caught up with that and that became extremely problematic. So your traditional offenses, you know, a murder is a murder. It doesn't matter whether or not you met the person on Craigslist or you met them in real life. You know, fraud, whether or not it happened through a phishing scheme that you clicked on an email or whether or not it happened because you filled out a form at a mall, a fraud is a fraud. Where there has been change has been really in the cyberbullying world. But there are areas that we're going to have to continue to innovate and create new law. We're just not there yet.
In terms of cyberbullying, would you say that any additional changes should be implemented in order to continue to strengthen and to protect those who are bullied online?
Mm-hmm. I think the new legislation is better than anything we've had before. I think it's going to take time to see how the judges interpret the new legislation to see where changes need to be made. What I will say is I'm most excited about the new legislation surrounding, you know, the transfer of images. So if you send a photo to me and it's a photo that you did not want shared and then I shared it, there's times where that can be a criminal offense now. That was a big aspect of cyberbullying that had never been captured by the law. And so it created a lot of, you know, psychological pain and distress, particularly for young people, because this is a big deal, right? They're having their images used in a way that they never consented to. And once things are on the internet, they're out there forever. You can't get
Absolutely.
It back. So I do think that the new law that we have is a change in the right direction, but I think it's going to take a bit of time to see where further changes need to be in that particular realm.
In terms of social media that's out there, there are a lot of youth today who use Facebook, mm-hmm. YouTube, Twitter, and what they do is they end up releasing images mm-hmm. on the internet mm-hmm. by choice. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when I get asked by today's youth what they should do and not do and what they should avoid doing when using Facebook or any form of social media, is I always tell them, don't put anything up that you wouldn't want to be used mm-hmm. again. And there's an issue with some youth who will release images, put it up on Facebook, and then there are these various ad agencies who will take that image and will use it to promote a product. Do you think any legislations or laws should be implemented in order to prevent these companies from using an image when a user is on Facebook? If I post an image and let's say I have kids and I post pictures of my kids on the internet, I wouldn't want an ad agency to then use those images for an advertisement.
I think that is an area that's really a civil area as opposed to a policing area. And here's the problem, and I tell people this and they're always shocked. If you post your images on a social media site, that social media site may have the ability to use that in advertising. You have to check the user agreement. Nobody does. I know that nobody does. They're pages and pages long.
And fine print.
And particularly a young person who doesn't understand what that is, nobody's reading them. They're just clicking on it. But it's good that we're having this discussion now because I really think it's important that people be aware that what you put out there may in fact be used that way. But when you click on that agreement and you say, yes, I agree to use the social media site, you are agreeing to the terms and conditions, which may include having your images used in that way. So you can say, I didn't want that to happen, but at the same time you agreed to it. And that's why I say it's really a civil matter, because the criminal space in terms of criminal law can't get in the middle of that because you've agreed to it.
You made an interesting point when you mentioned that the legislation has changed to protect someone from having their image exploited. If I send a picture to someone mm-hmm. and I don't want that to be then used against me and released on the internet in mm-hmm. any way, shape, mm-hmm. or form due to privacy, I think that the legislation is very powerful and that that will protect a lot of potential victims from being victimized in the future. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, what I advise people as well, for close friends, is not to send images that you wouldn't want to be seen by anyone. But at the same time, I think an individual should have that comfort, that degree of comfort in knowing that I can send an image to anyone. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a certain image. It can just be an image of myself. And I should be comfortable knowing that you then will not take that picture and release it on the internet and anywhere and everywhere that you can. Mm-hmm. So the point that I wanted to make about privacy law is that it is changing. It is continuing to become stronger. And as time progresses, I think that if we're at this point and the legislation is as strong as it is, I think there are only improvements to be made down the road.
And I think it's important that people speak to each other, to friends. I think that it's important that families have conversations around their dinner table about their digital footprint. And I say that because, you know, the commodity of the future will be privacy. Because you can't get it back once you've released the stuff out there. And a lot of young people don't think about it. And you know, in fact, I have people say to me, you know, Shauna, I want to be a police officer one day. You know, tell me what you think I should do. And one of the things that I tell them that they should do is review all of their social media accounts. They're going to have to do probably some kind of a purge to really look at what they have out there and why. For a whole bunch of reasons. One, because it might not be appropriate. Two, because now your identity as a police officer becomes intertwined with your personal identity. Three, because things like privacy become important, because if you get into our world, there are people who will be interested in finding out about you online, and you know that information really needs to be locked down, who your friends are, who your family are. And those are things that people never think about until there's an issue. And once there's an issue, it's like the genie out of the bottle. You can't put it back in.
Exactly.
So for people to have conversations around the dinner table about how, you know, what you're putting out there on social media may affect your ability to get a job in the future. I mean, what 15-year-old is thinking about that? Probably not very many. So it's an important discussion to have, and a discussion that lots of parents aren't having, because when they grew up, right, this was not an issue. So
That's
they don't
true.
Even think about it, right? How many people on your Facebook page do you know in real life? Do you personally know? And the ones that you don't know, how do you know they're real people? How do you know that they don't have some nefarious purpose for being there? Why are they there if you don't know them? If they're friends of a friend, okay, that makes sense, right? That's, you know, Magdalena's friend. Mm-hmm. That's cool. We'll be friends online. But, you know, lots of times I know young people have people on their Facebook page. They have no idea who they are, which means that you're opening yourself and all your private information, your photos, who your friends are, where you go, what you do. You're opening that up to people you don't know.
And I think that's a huge concern. And with my Facebook account, I only have people on my account that I know, mm-hmm. that I've met, that I'm friends with.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly suggest to anyone who is a user, if you have anyone on your account that you're not certain as to who they are, who, what, where, when, why, where did they come from, it's mm-hmm. best to remove.
Absolutely.
Remove them, because why would you have someone looking at your account, your date of birth? There's so much personal information that's released on certain social media. Like, some people even have their address.
Yes, I know.
Or
phone number,
email, or where they attend, what school they attend.
Yes.
And it just makes it so easy for someone to start following you as
mm-hmm.
a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another issue to be concerned about, stalking.
Yes.
It can lead to a lot of crimes, and that's the last thing you want to do, is to release too much information about your personal life and also your address.
So, that's great advice.
Yeah. And then if you have your date of birth, I don't even have my date of birth on my Facebook account, because that's personal information. Mm. So
I don't have it on mine because I don't want people to know how old I am.
No! You're young. You look great. So I think that's very valuable information that you provided our listeners with today.